You are listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio. I'm Matthew Bosler.
And I'm Luke LeVanway.
Now, joining us on the line to talk a bit of water economics is David Zetland. He's a senior water economist at Wageningen University in the Netherlands and author of the new book, The End of Abundance, Economic Solutions to Water Scarcity. And he also writes the blog Aguanomics, which you can find at www.aguanomics.com. David, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Great. Thanks to be here.
Now, obviously the underlying issue here is that water is a finite substance, and eventually we're going to, the supplies are going to dwindle, correct?
Kind of correct. It's a finite but renewable substance. So unlike something like coal or even oil, the water comes back every time it rains or snows. So the key is basically to use what you can while it's around. Don't use it all up before it comes back again.
Right. And I mean, you talk about water economics. It's obviously in the United States, water is a resource that is, you know, currently being heavily subsidized through public utilities companies. And the sort of the issue here is that, you know, the market for water is being distorted.
Well, yeah, that'll be one issue. So let's kind of go a little bit over the whole different types of water economics, if you will. And this is what I cover in the book, which is kind of a general overview of all these topics. And the reason I gave a general overview is because each individual topic is so complicated, like water in the environment compared to water and energy, that it takes a lot of time to learn what's going on there. So what I do is I try to summarize what's going on and the economics that applies to that particular use of water. So I talk about the different uses of water. So, you know, in what you just said is you mentioned several things in the same sentence. You said public utilities and water markets, for example. And water markets are usually for bulk water between bulk users. So farmers are going to be having maybe a water market, but a water utility is going to be bringing water to our taps. And then maybe a different utility is going to take the water away in terms of wastewater, and then they're going to treat it, and then they're going to put it into the environment where there's going to be wetlands or there's going to be water quality issues. And then maybe the river might go past an energy plant that uses the water to cool down its thermoelectric generators. So as the water flows around in the natural and human environment, it gets used by different groups in different ways. And there's what I'm talking about in the book and in general is the way that we use economics and the policies that come out of politics that affects the way we use the water and often distorts them to ways that people don't really want if you ask them a straight question.
Right. So I guess, you know, maybe we should sort of disentangle this a little bit.
I tried to tangle it up for you, but yeah.
Right, right. And well, starting with, I guess the what you were talking about in your article with the,
sure,
the farmers in California, right?
Sure.
And then maybe we can move on to public utilities and that sort of thing. But you cite two examples of pushback to market pricing for water in California in your article today on Aguanomics. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about those.
Right. So any farmers in most parts of the world use water from two different sources. They get it, or three, the rain, the groundwater, and then surface waters. And the groundwater sources, they tend to be, they just pump it from under their land, and sometimes they affect each other. But the biggest distortions in water consumption happen with surface waters, either because somebody builds a big aqueduct and brings the water to the farmers, or because the farmers take the water out of the river and then there's nothing left for the fish. So the thing to worry about is subsidies that go towards infrastructure that brings water from one place to another and gives water that's too cheap, basically, to the farmers. The subsidy is part of that problem. And the other part that you want to worry about is whether or not the agricultural consumption is reducing water for environment or for the cities. And a lot of farmers, most water in the world, generally speaking, people say 70 or 80% of the water that is controlled by humans is used by agriculture. And in a time of water scarcity, which is more common in more places now, a lot of people say, well, the farmers have got 80%, let's go get it from them. And the farmers, I think, have a really good reason to be upset about that, because most people from the cities or from the nature groups say, just give it to us, we want it more, we deserve it more. And I'm someone who says, well, wait, those farmers have got a property right. And between these different groups, you actually end up getting lots of fights and lawsuits and stuff like that. But what I and lots of other economists advocate is more markets for water, so that farmers can be paid to stop using the water they've been using historically, and the markets will also move water in an efficient way to environmental organizations that care more about rivers or cities that really do need more water, or even other farmers, which is a very significant market, who want to buy water from farmers who rather have the money.
Almost like a water exchange.
That's right, yeah. And the exchange is going to be very local, because you can't really take water from California and say, well, let's just use this in Kansas. So most of these exchanges are going to be based on the expense of moving water around, or the capacity based on infrastructure, because it's just way too expensive to move water over long distances because it's so heavy.
And so I guess one of the big problems right now in that sort of, I guess, lack of a market is the agricultural subsidies, correct? Is that what you were touching on a bit earlier?
There's different types of problems with agricultural subsidies. They move food into the wrong crops, obviously. Or sorry, they move production into the wrong crops. But subsidies towards water consumption by farmers mean that they're going to use more than they would if they were paying a higher price. And that just means that, you know, the typical example, well, they're growing alfalfa in the desert. And the more complicated version of why are they growing alfalfa in the desert is because that's the most profitable thing to do. If they were paying more for water, then they would grow a less water-intensive and more labor-intensive or more land-intensive type of, or machinery-intensive type of crop. So when the water is, quote, too cheap, then you're going to get different cropping outcomes compared to when it's at a price that reflects its scarcity.
So farmers may complain that they're not able to grow these crops anymore, but really they're just in denial right now. Like their practices just aren't sustainable.
Yeah, but they've been kind of put into that corner by the policies of the past and the present policies by far. So what they say is, I'm growing this crop, let's call it alfalfa, and if you raise my price because cities are willing to buy water, other farmers can buy the water, or you're overpumping the groundwater, overpumping the aquifer, if you raise my price, I won't be able to grow alfalfa. And that's true, but what we're doing is we're saying stop this stupid idea of cheap prices and adjust your behavior. And farmers who are facing more expensive water, that's true, they'll switch away from alfalfa, but they'll switch to other crops that make more money, tomatoes, strawberries, maybe even fruits or something like that. And some farmers might go out of business, but most of them are going to switch their cropping pattern to a different set of crops that makes them that maximizes their profits.
So these are some of the changes that we would start to see with agricultural water reform, but what about reforming water use on more of a public basis? How does market water pricing change the business model of like a large public water company, for example?
So, right. This is a totally different topic, because we're talking about, you know, water utilities. They might be public. It might be publicly run, like the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. It might be privately run, like the water utilities all around the United Kingdom or some places in the United States. But the issue is not really public or private, because all of those utilities are regulated local monopolies. The issue is that the price of water in those systems reflects the cost of delivery, and or sometimes even less than the cost of delivery, because they're not investing enough in repairing leaky pipes and so on. But the problem is that they don't necessarily price water scarcity. And basically what that means is that when you're in Las Vegas and you have a price of $2 or $3 for 750 gallons of water, then you might say, wow, that's pretty cheap. I'm going to use water on this or that. And the price reflects the cost of delivery, but at some point, if everybody is using a lot of water, there's not very much water left. So it doesn't reflect the actual scarcity of the water itself. And when that happens, you actually have shortages and headlines, and people are told to stop watering their lawns and take a shorter shower and so on. And my all of those command and control regulations are actually not very popular, but they're also very inefficient because some people are told to stop watering their lawns, but there's no reason to not take a long shower. So as an economist, I say what we should do is we should have the price of water for your tap reflect the water scarcity, and then the price will be higher. So that upsets people. But what you get with a higher price is that everybody will start using less water in ways that they prefer. So some people will have a brown lawn and some people will take a shorter shower. And more importantly, the community won't run out of water so that you have a reliable water service and then you get to use it for whatever you want.
How dangerous is that sort of scenario? How far down the road the way we're headed, would that become an issue?
Well, it's an issue day in and day out. It's been happening for years in the U.S., let alone around the world. So,
in certain areas, right? I mean,
in certain areas, yeah. I mean, the big case in terms of wow, I never thought that would happen is in Atlanta, where you know everybody expects to have water shortages in Southern California. But let me back up a second. Southern California is an arid place, and it doesn't rain very much. But that doesn't mean you have to have a water shortage. You just need to manage whatever water you've got. So it's not inherently true. And what we found in Atlanta, which is not a dry area, is they also had a water shortage because they were selling water quite cheaply as if and not reflecting anything to do with scarcity. And as Atlanta expanded and expanded and expanded in population, people just kept using more water. And suddenly, wow, we don't have any water anymore. So that place is, you know, totally a wet area, but they also have a water shortage. The same thing has happened in southern England, which everybody, as far as I have ever met, thinks of as a wet, green place, but they have water shortages in lots of England now because, again, not pricing scarcity in their water supply, in their water utilities.
Right, because I know, like, for myself, I pay a flat bill every 3 months or so, like every quarter, for all the water I, you know, am pleased to use. So what sort of
all you can eat?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So what sort of pricing mechanisms need to be implemented to move away from that? Like how would the pricing mechanism work? I guess is what I'm asking.
Right. So that system that you have is the same that I have in Amsterdam, and that basically assumes that there's unlimited water to go through the pipes. So they don't care about the volume of water you use. And that pricing system is easy to understand, and it's simple. So that's the one to use when you do have plenty of water. If you start having problems with water supplies for any reason, because of a drought or because people want to put more water in the environment, then you need to start pricing water volumetrically. You need to have a water meter, and then people need to be charged. The easiest thing to do is just charge like gasoline. You say, if you use 700 gallons, you're going to pay $3. And this is water, not gas, right? It's quite cheap. So, that part people always are amazed at, that it's cheap for such a great product. But then you pay volumetrically, and you'll say, wow, I know I'm not going to leave my tap running all night because I know I'm going to pay more. And so you get these very small bits of change of behavior that do have a big impact on consumption. And what I mean by letting the tap run all night, it means fixing that leak.
So I guess where are we at in terms of policy right now? I mean, what is the current state of water policy? Where does it need to go to move toward a more market-based pricing system?
So the policy, I mean, what I talk about in the book, the theme of the end of abundance is that a lot of our water management institutions are from a time of abundance. And with water being more scarce, we need to manage water differently. And because of the topics are so diverse, whether it's the environment or agricultural water, there's different ways of reflecting scarcity. So market prices that you mentioned are more likely when you have a water market. And you and I don't have a water market at our water tap. We have a price that's set by a regulator and a water utility. So where you want to go with the prices at the tap is that when water is more scarce, you want the price to go up, and everybody knows about it. There's a lot of information campaigns. And then people will change their behavior. Some of them will install high-efficiency clothes washers or whatever. And then there will not be a water shortage. I mean, I hate to say it. So what needs to happen in terms of policies is, I hate to say it so simply, but what you need to do in terms of policies, you need to make it easier to price for scarcity. And I was just talking to the Public Utilities Commission in San Francisco yesterday. These guys are in charge of pricing water. And they tend to be concentrating on other stuff, which, quite honestly, I was flabbergasted at the proposal that they're going to put out, which is going to be a step in the wrong direction, and it's going to be less sustainable and less fair and less efficient. And that's cutting-edge policy. They're actually walking the wrong way. So, and San Francisco is known as a fairly progressive place about these things. So I think that the way policies need to go is they need to look down the road and say, how are we going to have a sustainable water supply, and I mean environmentally and economically sustainable, and make sure that we use the tools at hand. And the easiest tools to use are prices. You can send newsletters to people and tell them to be good citizens, but really it's much more easier to say the water is scarce, so we have to raise the price.
Oh, yeah. Is there anyone working on this in Congress right now or at the state level? Are there any initiatives that are sort of trying to move toward a more sustainable market-based water pricing effort that you're aware of?
I'm not sure. I would say, I mean, Congress is not the right place to do it. It's because water management is local. So, you know, even in the U.S., there's 52,000 different water systems. And roughly, I just learned this today, the other day, the breakdown. I knew the 52,000, but I learned that the breakdown is that 600 of them serve 100,000 people or more. So there's 600 big systems across 50 states, and then there's another, over 50,000 systems. And those 600 systems are managed by, local politicians, oversight boards, regulators, but they're also managed with a lot of input from citizens. So I think that, what I say in my book is go look at your local water utility and see what they're doing in terms of policies. And if they say, we don't have enough money to fix the leaky pipes or we're going to have a shortage, then look a lot closer at what they're doing and see what's going on. And the decisions that are made locally can establish local sustainable water consumption so that you don't have to worry about the water that's coming to your house.
David Zetland, he's senior water economist at Wageningen University in the Netherlands and author of the new book, The End of Abundance, Economic Solutions to Water Scarcity. He also writes the blog Aquanomics, which you can find at www.aquanomics.com. David, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jens.
For Matthew Bosler, I'm Luke Levanway. You are listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio.
You've been listening to Strategies on Benzinga Radio. For our complete range of programming, be sure to visit radio.benzinga.com.